Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing. I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic. It is Tuesday morning here in the DMV. Just a little over 48 hours away from the first round of the 2024 NFL Draft. We're almost there, kids. Hang in there. Don't do anything crazy. Just stay strong. Put in earplugs. Put your hands over your ears and go la 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 la, whatever it is. If you don't want to hear any more of the general blather about this whole situation, but we are going to talk a little bit more. We're not blathering, we're informing here on the Standing Room Only podcast. So we're going to continue to talk about what the Washington Commanders may be up to today and the NFL draft with our guy. We saved the best for last, Logan Paulson, Commanders analyst. You can find him, of course, on the team website. He's also got his own Instagram feed, Logan_Paulson on Instagram. He also does the Take Command podcast with Craig Hoffman. And Logan is a really good analyst and I enjoy talking to him. So we discussed a bunch of different topics. What did we discuss? Well, we discussed who Logan's tight end to watch that Logan likes. We discussed why Washington hasn't been bringing in receivers for their 30 visits. And does that say anything about what they think of their group internally? We talked about the idea of, as I wrote in my final mock draft the other day, which is on The Athletic, about does trading up for a tackle actually make sense when the players that we're discussing are that young and inexperienced? Like a Tyler Guyton, if they're not ready to go, does it matter, therefore, to trade up? Or are you better off possibly trading back, which is what I did in that mock draft, and planning for 2025, because that was another question. How much of their moves are we expecting tomorrow or on Thursday to be about trying to compete now versus trying to go forward and try to build something forward? And then, of course, yes, we spent the bulk of the time talking about the quarterbacks, including Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, a little bit of Drake May as well. So we'll get to all that in a moment, I promise, here on the Standing Room Only podcast, which, of course, you can find on iTunes, Spotify, or anywhere you do your podcasting. Busy week upon us here, without question. The draft is on Thursday. I will be out in Ashburn on Thursday, Friday, Saturday. The timing of the podcasts over that time, it's going to just honestly be dependent on what else I have to do. The writing part is the day job. This is I thoroughly enjoy this, as I think you guys know, but we'll get to this as soon as I can. So hopefully it'll be after each day, but we'll see. But either way, make sure you subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss anything. Whenever we get it up, we'll have plenty up there, as well as, of course, on The Athletic. If you have yet to subscribe, I appreciate it if you consider doing so, and certainly appreciate everybody who has already done that. It's been a fun ride. It's been an exhausting ride these last 3 or 4 months, not going to lie, especially just talking about the same handful of players the same, number two pick forever. But at the same time, having people here who are into it, who are enthused, who are complimentary, even the people who push back. I mean, as long as it's all done within a reasonable way, I don't pretend I have all the ideas. I don't think most of us who are reasonable do. So it's been great to hear your ideas as well as to what's been going on here through this process. I wanted to highlight a comment here that I saw in my story up this morning about the com we had to write a commander or a team big board for your team. So basically a bunch of names to consider at every on every day of the draft. And I had a comment here. Somebody identified themselves as HK, and he made the following observation. We're going to look back on the WASH media coverage of this draft as some sort of sociological quirk. Even Ben, my favorite beat reporter, thank you, HK, appreciate that, devotes nearly all of May's blurb on the negatives, while the opposite is true of Daniels and JJ. This is despite May being the second overall QB on both the consensus board and the Athletic's own board. It's despite all the analytics geeks, of which the Washington brass hold highly, shouting May's name from the rooftops. And it's despite no one from Washington saying a single word about any of them. Really fascinating look at groupthink. Think we can expect an article or two in this space a week or so from now on the parallels between the situations of Mac Jones and Trey Lance, as well as CJ Stroud and Will Levis, end quote. What I find interesting about this is the notion of, the groupthink. I think there's a lot to this. In that, what is the goal here from somebody like me talking to you? There are people out there who you obviously, if you're listening to this podcast, that you're aware of that are drafts that they spend their time on the film trying to either come up with their own rankings to, or show you why they like this player or that player or what their concerns over here or there. And that's all good and good for them to do that. My role here, and I think for a lot of reporters, is not to do that. I try to keep my biases out of it, and for a very simple reason. I don't know. When I used to cover the NBA, I could watch a player, a college player, or maybe a player for some other team, and in relative short order, figure out who he is, what he does it make sense for my basketball sensibilities, or in this case, for the Wizards, because that was the team I was covering. It's much more exposed. You're watching all players play at the same time. You can see the decision making. It's very, I won't say obvious because there's mistakes, of course, made, but it's very obvious. Here, the variables are so high off the charts for any given play, right? I mean, how was the blocking? Did they have the right play call against whatever the specific coverage is? We don't know the play call for the offense. So did the quarterback make the right read, even if it's a completion? Maybe even if it's an incompletion, did he make the perfect read? We all understand the variables here. Is the receiver good enough? All the things. I don't pretend to be that guy, so I am trying to go off information that I have. So you're right. The information is not coming from the team. We have said this many times. Again, going down the stretch here, whether it's Adam Schefter or anybody else, nobody is saying, sources say the Commanders are leaning this direction. Nobody is saying that, which at least they aren't as of this moment. So yes, we have to get outside opinion. Now, you guys have heard me bring in a bunch of different people here. I brought in Chris Sims. I brought in Greg Cosell. I had Randy Mueller, a former NFL general manager, on a couple of months ago. We've had on an analytics person. You'll hear Logan in a minute. We've had all kinds of different people come on and give their opinion. And at the end of the day, and then on top of that, of course, I'm talking to people around the league. Again, I had 17 sources rank their top four quarterbacks according to, rank their top four quarterbacks for this anonymous poll that I did a few weeks ago. That ultimately, the collective score of that poll was Caleb Williams in a tier of his own, Jaden Daniels on a tier of his own, and Drake May one smidge ahead of JJ McCarthy. I think it was like a one vote difference. And yet, and so that doesn't mean any of that. That doesn't mean the Commanders will pick Drake May. I'm sorry. It doesn't mean that the Commanders agree with that. They may very well like Drake May the most, but the notion of groupthink, and again, I'm not knocking HK. His observations are accurate. I'm sure I have been probably a little bit harder on Drake May than the other two, but that's in part because that's what I'm hearing the most. I really, I had in that survey, I had two active general managers give me their rankings. One of them had Drake May second, the other one had Jaden Daniels. I've subsequently, just in the last 3 or 4 days, asked other teams, hey, what's your ranking for these quarterbacks? They had Daniels, both of them. When I listen to the outside people, now I think the concern I get sometimes is like I saw Daniel Jeremiah, who had been going Drake May here, but now he switched it to Daniels and he's saying basically, I keep hearing this. Well, I don't know that this means anything. I don't know that, like, to the point of like the Commanders not talking, it does feel like we may be getting into a game of telephone. I addressed this on a podcast the other day that this is starting to remind me a little bit of the Ben Johnson situation, that people are coming to a consensus that may or may not actually be there. But what do we make of that? Like, at the end of the day, I can only go on what I go on. I really try not to let the other noise influence me, other than, and again, I don't know that anybody I've heard who's speaking clearly from their own thought is saying anything different than what I'm hearing. Like, I don't know who Schefter is talking to, but he's been basically saying the exact same thing I've been saying here for like a month, that if I read the signs as best I can tell, and I can't like get into like every crumb that I hear or think, or think every crumb that I hear and see, but when I put it all together, there's enough signs for me to think that Jaden Daniels, based on the information I have, is more likely the pick than Drake May, and perhaps substantially more. So I understand the notion of like groupthink, and I rail against it all the time, but groupthink goes in a lot of different directions. For example, the mention here that Drake May being the consensus, being number two on the consensus board and the Athletics on board. I'm not sure what the consensus board is. Again, if it was my story, Daniels was two. And we've talked about this for weeks. There's been this sharp divide between the people who are the public evaluators, the Dane Brugler's, the Mel Kiper's, whatever, although maybe not Mel Kiper specifically, but just in general, those guys, versus people inside the league. And the people inside the league have been pretty, I don't want to say adamant, like they're pounding the table saying it's definitely Daniels, but I've heard way more people discuss Daniels as the guy at two than I have Drake May. And then it says here that it mentions that that nearly all the May blurbs are focused on the negatives, and the opposite is true for Daniels and JJ. Well, let's talk about JJ because Logan and I did that for a bit, and I mentioned a quote to him that's in this new big board, and I'll just say it again now. So apologies that you're going to hear it twice, but I do think it's an interesting look at this. When I wrote that poll, or when I not wrote, but when I did that poll a couple of weeks ago, I spoke to, as I said, 17 sources, but I did talk to other people who just chose not to reveal their rankings. And what a GM, an active GM, said to me when we were discussing the concept of the noise and what's real and what's nonsense and all that, he brings up on his own JJ McCarthy, and he does it to a guy who obviously he knows covers the Commander, so perhaps this is why he uses this specific example. But here's what he had to say about the noise of that we hear pre-draft. Quote, I find it almost malpractice that someone would record or write that it is absurd Washington might choose McCarthy at two because he is, air quote, supposedly the fourth QB in this draft, end quote. Now, the point was to say that there's this, when this whole process started, the group think was this is a discussion between Caleb Williams and whether Drake May or Jaden Daniels is on the same level as Caleb Williams, if there's a difference, and if there is, where do those two rank? Everybody just, JJ McCarthy can't be true. They watched JJ McCarthy not have be the central figure for Michigan's offense that went and won a national title, that the Penn State game, he threw eight passes total, I think none in the second half. That he was never being given the keys to the offense, that therefore, for all these things, he can't be that guy. Independent of the fact that Jim Harbaugh is trying to win games, he's not necessarily trying to develop J.J. McCarthy to be an NFL quarterback. I mean, he is by definition of helping in practice, but I mean, they didn't completely gear everything towards the single goal of J.J. McCarthy getting ready for the NFL. And I, you know, this whole time, like I keep, like I, you can go back to listen to all these conversations I've had. I don't think I've one time dismissed J.J. McCarthy. I can't even like admit, I haven't been able to shake him. And it's for reasons that Logan and I get into, so I won't step on that too much. But my point is that the groupthink on so many levels began months ago. It's not just one writing these blurbs. It's the idea that J.J. McCarthy could even be discussed in this realm. When you know, go back and listen to when I had Randy on here in February. He said then, it was the first time I'd heard somebody say this, that he had McCarthy over May and maybe even by a substantial amount. I think he has McCarthy as his final QB2, I believe, over May. And we'll talk to Logan Paulson, also a big fan of McCarthy. I think that the groupthink aspect, while true, it's whatever's being discussed now is in somewhat, it comes across as being groupthink because it may be the changing of the narrative is such, i.e. Drake May has these issues, is because it wasn't being discussed before, or that J.J. McCarthy is worthy of being discussed in this range because it wasn't happening before. I think these things are notable. So I do agree with HK that like this is going to be a really interesting sociological look back. By the way, my major in college was sociology. I'm not pretending I use that here, but like I did ultimately land on that as a major. Journalism was my minor. They didn't have a journalism major at UMBC. And I like sociology. I wouldn't sit here and tell you that like I was like drawn to it. I just took some classes. Those seemed to be interesting. And I wasn't exactly focused, I would say, in my college years or, you know. So my point is just that the notion of groupthink infers that we started at a level playing field and now people are filling it in with things that they may or may not be thinking because of what others are saying. I do worry about that a little bit with the notion of Jaden Daniels at 2. I worry about it less with the notion of Drake May's concerns being more pronounced in our conversation than Daniels' positives or even McCarthy's positives. But this also brings me to a different point. We already went through a notable search for the Commanders earlier this year with the coaching search. Now, yes, there was the GM search as well, but, you know, Adam Peters was kind, I don't want to say he was the definitive front runner, but really, if you look at the whole circumstance, kind of was. I don't want to say that it was rigged in his favor. I just like, look, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that I 100% thought Adam Peters was definitely getting the job. But when Adam Peters, the guy who has been the hot candidate for a couple of years, the question for me mostly was, is he interested? You know, this is a new ownership group. This team has been, this franchise has been horrendous for years. How excited would he be to work with Josh Harris? Well, obviously, it turned out the answer was he was very excited. So he did. That said, when we got to the coaching search, obviously we know what happened there, that it was very a bit chaotic at the end. Right, with regards to the ultimate decision. And for a lot of people, landing on Dan Quinn, it felt like the rug was pulled out from under them because the expectation was Ben Johnson, because the Commanders were not giving much information or any. And there was this notion that Ben Johnson being, you know, this year's hot offensive coordinator type, that would be the play, even though there was a lot of reasons from the jump to see that Dan Quinn could be the guy. Dan Quinn had already been a head coach. Adam Peters had not been a GM. Josh Harris had not been an NFL owner. There's something to be said for like having everybody being a first year, what they're doing, not being a great idea. And clearly Ben Johnson, whatever you want to say about him, clearly doesn't even believe he's ready for this opportunity. So it makes sense to a degree to have a veteran coach. And a lot of people like Dan Quinn, and we don't have to go back to that. But my point is that part of the issue, I think, there was because the team was being so quiet, I don't think they prepped their audience enough that something else could happen. Now, what do I mean by that? I don't mean you run around and you tell the world that, hey, don't sleep on Dan Quinn. But like, there are ways to, through the media or another, or in your own comments, to give people a bit of a heads up. Hey, we're not dismissing any of this. And I feel, it's conceivable that it could be somebody else. But by the time it came out that, like, when it became, like, I've been saying it for weeks, but when Adam Schefter comes out and says, hey, don't be so sure that it's Ben Johnson. Well, now, obviously, because he's Schefter, it takes on a lot more weight. And now people are like, oh, wait, what's going on? And it was confusing. And then then Ben Johnson bails and all that stuff. And what I'm saying here is, like, the notion of the groupthink, I think there's also, it goes to what else is happening. Like, if let's just say, for argument's sake, it's not Jaden Daniels, whether even if it's Drake May, who has been considered to be the next, the number, the guy in competition with Daniels, a lot of people would still be like, oh, what the heck? Why is it this guy? When it's with JJ McCarthy would blow people's minds. But there are ways to help put out a message to prepare people for what could happen, right? And I don't know that what they've been doing is helpful in that regard. Now, this is where the group think comes into play, since we don't have any idea what they're thinking. And I can tell you, I just spoke today to people. Well, if I was writing a story, I would say, familiar with the situation, close to the situation, have you, who say they don't know. They don't know what's going on. They don't know who they're going to pick. And that's fine that they've been this covert. I don't have any issue with them being this quiet about it. But my point is, we have to go on something. What are we supposed to go on? And like, the people who are cocky enough to do their own thing and say, I think this, and that's, it's clearly not a group thing, doesn't necessarily mean that's a good idea. They may be going off of their own biases. Like, I really do try when I'm doing like my mock drafts or other analysis to not be biased about it. Now, there's always going to be some bias because we all value di things differently, right? So if a, you know, and I talk, we talk about this with Logan a little bit. It's impossible to completely strip it all out, but at some point, if you're just going to be overly aggressive, I think this is why I think a lot of people who study the draft stink at mock drafts, because they put their own voice into it way too much. They've studied the tape. They think this guy is better than that guy. Therefore, they're going to put them there. That doesn't matter. Your opinion does not matter here. What matters is, what do you think the team is going to do? That's why when I did a mock draft exercise the other day with Evan Silva and Danny Heifetz, which is a really good, fun podcast, if you didn't hear it yet, we state, no, we're not doing what we would do. We're doing what we think they would do, because that's what matters here. And my point is that the people who talk about in sort of like confident, non-herd mentality maze, it doesn't mean that they actually have their own, it doesn't mean that they have a good opinion. It just means that they're putting themselves out there. But like someone like me, I'm trying to be like somewhat conscientious. I'm not, my opinion doesn't matter. I don't know which of these quarterbacks is the best. So I ask the people. And when I ask the people, this is what is being said. Now, when the group mentality with the Washington media, well, I mean, would like to think probably that others on the beat are also conscientious and not trying to, put their own opinion out there into the mix. So, like, I understand the idea of what groupthink is, but what I'm saying is that ultimately, that doesn't mean it's wrong. If groupthink is when you're not actually thinking for yourself, but you're just hearing X and following it as if it's truth, that's not what I do. What I do is ask questions, decipher the information, and then from there, tell you guys what I'm hearing and then to an extent what I'm thinking based off of that information. And that's why for all this time, I have not been able to shake McCarthy. I don't know that he would necessarily be the call it to, even if Adam Peters liked him the best. Is that the way to go? He probably has a lesser upside than the other two guys. There's really no trade down option because, as we know with the board, the next teams that realistically this team would deal with for a quarterback was Minnesota at 11. Washington has to come away with a quarterback. So if you trade down because you think you can get McCarthy later, well, then you have to trade back up. So that's why it's a whole confusing. And then I really enjoyed Logan and I's conversation about this. So I'll get to that here literally in a second, I promise. Well, not literally, because I'm still talking, but you know what I mean. So I just think it's fascinating. I really do appreciate HK's comment about that we're going to look back on this as a sociological experiment, essentially, as to what the heck was going on here for the last 3 or 4 months. It's very confusing. There's so many variables. It's not a matter of who you talk to last is the opinion you form. It is, though, trying to figure out, based on all the opinions that you get, how do you determine what makes the most sense? And all I can tell you is, having gone through this now for the last 3 or 4 months, is there have been more conversations about Drake May's good and bad than there have been about Jaden Daniels' good and bad, and even JJ McCarthy's good and bad. So I think the observation is accurate that I probably have been focusing more on Drake May's negatives than the other two. But that's also because that's what I'm hearing. And these people that I'm talking to have no real connection to each other. But simultaneously, like I said, I'm repeating myself, but simultaneously, I'm telling you, I do worry about the group thinking when it comes to the idea of Jaden Daniels at two, because there is no information now. Everybody's just pivoting because they don't want to feel like they were wrong or left out. It is really all interesting. I excited for the fact that we're going to get a definitive answer here in a couple of days, one way or the other. I had Jaden Daniels still in my final mocks. I don't know that I could put myself in a position to write JJ McCarthy's name down. And like, look, I'm aware that over the last 24 hours, like, this has sort of bubbled up a little bit, or 40 hours bubbled up a little bit, as that the Commanders could be interested in McCarthy. I get that, but and I guess, again, go back and listen. I've said repeatedly that there's reasons to connect McCarthy here because of the fact that he fits what a Kyle Shanahan team would like to do. And Kyle Shanahan, though he isn't here, his former assistant GM is here. The guy he was the OC for in Atlanta is here. They have to be influenced to some degree. It's impossible to think they wouldn't. So I am very fascinated by what's about to happen. I would just say that, if you made me bet right now, Daniels and I'm not saying it couldn't be May, but just based on the information I've had over the last 3 months, yeah, I have talked more about May's concerns than the other two. I'm not going to ignore that and think that's just wrong. Not saying, Dane Brugger likes Drake May more. Awesome. Dane's great at his job. He's one person. And I've talked to a lot of people, and the general view is they see it as Daniels is the likely pick, and don't discount McCarthy. Got it? Got it. All right. I'm going to talk more about the draft, obviously, over on X at Ben Standick. So, you can just make sure to follow me there. I will put out a final mock draft. I have to turn mine into the Huddle Report for the contest on Wednesday night. So at some point, I will tweet that out. Don't ask me why, but like, I can't put it on the Athletic, but I will have it up somewhere, or at least I'll tweet it out or something. So just keep all that in mind as we go forward here. All right. Let's get to Logan. All right. I'll talk a little bit more about some of the drafts after Logan, but I want to get to him. So here's Logan Paulson. We went through the quarterbacks, receivers, tight end, what the Commanders are doing. Is this more about this year or next year? Always fun talking to Logan. So here we go. Logan Paulson on the Standard Room Only podcast. All right. As promised, joining me here for our, I don't know if it's going to be our final podcast before draft, but probably we saved the best for last. Logan Paulson, Commanders analyst, former NFL player, film watcher, burgeoning coach, gonna make I who I advocated should be on the current staff, but nobody listened to me. First off, how are we doing? It's a week a million of discussing these quarterbacks. It's almost done. We're talking Tuesday morning. How are you
Yeah.
feeling? Just for yourself, how are you feeling at this point?
I'm doing great, man. I love the draft. I love the nuance of it. I love the different perspectives. The only thing that I find even a little bit frustrating is when people get super, super dogmatic about one player, being like, this is the guy, and there's no everybody else. And I understand that those perspectives are important, and it's good to have those strong viewpoints. But I just think there's so much subjectivity to this process, and that's one of the things that makes it fun to talk about. Is because we could talk. I've talked to you a bunch over the course of this process, and as you can attest to, one day I'm in on JJ, one day I'm in on Jaden, one day I'm in on Drake. And it kind of depends on what you're watching at the time and how you're feeling. And then ultimately, you got to go back to your notes and say, how do I really feel about this guy? And to kind of find some kernel of truth. And that I really just enjoy it. And I think I enjoy it because it's an opportunity for these guys to kind of have a life-changing experience. And these are the new faces of the NFL, which is always fun. So.
Yeah, I think what's I find somewhat lost, like to your point about being dogmatic about any one player, I feel like what's somewhat lost in this. And look, we know the numbers, right? Of the if we include Caleb Williams of the top of the four quarterbacks, two of them will likely not work out for whatever the reason.
Right.
And now you're hoping the other two do and maybe even work out to a really, really big degree. But on the surface, if Washington were to take any of the three, not Caleb Williams, the other ones, like if we strip away the emotion and the I want this guy, like, oh, okay, they're going to have a young quarterback who's coming in that, by most accounts that I've talked to, are worthy of being picked this high. It doesn't mean they're going to be to become the next great thing, but at the same point, like they're going to be in a better spot Thursday at 9:30, whatever time it is, or I hope it's not that late, whatever time it is that they pick a player than they are today. But it feels like it is like everybody's act like if they don't take this guy, if they don't take Drake May, or they do take JJ McCarthy, that the world is going to fall apart. And I feel like that, and I'm not the optimism guy. That's not me. I'm not, but like it feels like in this case, like, well, wait a minute, like why are we? It's I think it's the world's going to be okay. I think.
I mean, I agree. You know, I think that's the thing is like when you tier them out, like when you tier the quarterbacks out, obviously, I think Caleb Williams is in his own tier. I think he might be the best player in the draft. Like, I'm very high on him. But I kind of cluster those next three guys together, right? Because I think when you just sit back and take an objective look at it, you say, what do they do well? What do they do poorly? They all have their strengths, they all have their weaknesses. It's just about kind of, do you think you could make them work as a coach and as a staff and as an organization? And so if they draft Drake May, I'm excited, man, because he's got some excellent throws on tape. Are there some things he can clean up? Absolutely. JJ McCarthy, if they draft him at two, I'm really ecstatic because I really enjoy his film. I like the athlete. I like the upside. I think his arm talent's better than people think. But you say, can he learn on the job? Can he develop? Like, I don't know. That's the million-dollar question with him. And then Jaden is probably the safest of the three, I would say, in terms of athletic upside, mechanics, big playability, kind of playmaking moxie, just in general throwing in as a runner. But the offense that he ran at LSU was incredibly simplistic. So how does he translate to a more complicated offense with more throws over the middle of the field? I have no idea. But if you've interviewed him and you've talked to him and you feel good about it, I feel good about it. And I just trust Adam Peters. I trust Dan. I think they're really smart guys. I think they understand that, and they understand the risk associated with it. And I think any one of those three is going to put, like you said, going to put Washington in a better position as a franchise come Thursday.
You know, obviously, I'm sure somebody out there, well, don't do this, have a life, but like if somebody did like a pie chart that showed the percentage of time spent on this podcast discussing these quarterbacks individually, clearly the most is going to have been on Jaden Daniels.
Right.
The next most will have been on Drake May. Then you would have McCarthy. And that's not to say that that's an accurate depiction of how it is. It's
Sure.
real. It's an accurate depiction, though, of the conversation that we're all having. And obviously, part of my job here is to figure out what do people want to hear about. And I don't get a lot of people going, tell me more about JJ McCarthy, even though when I talk to people, he mentioned, I told you, I saw right before I came on here that you had a video
Yeah.
up on the web, on the team site, in which you it's like you were a therapy session. You're like, okay, I've got to unburden myself. I got a big secret to tell everybody. I'm a guy like JJ McCarthy.
I
That's who I would
do.
probably pick.
I do like JJ McCarthy, and I can't help myself. I've tried not to like him. I tried to be like, oh, he doesn't have that many throws. But like when I just watch his throw for throw, I'm like, this is an NFL throw. This is an NFL concept. Like, this is his ability to run and scramble and do the zone read stuff and make plays off schedule. It's good, man. It's really, really good. And I understand that my own biases coming from a West Coast system are probably here, but I like him. I like it, and I can't help myself. And I understand his ceiling might not be that of Jaden Daniels and Drake May, but I see his floor so clearly, and I don't really buy into the winning stuff, but like in terms of his play on the field and what he does, it's NFL stuff. Every single time he throws the football. Like, I know everyone talks about his third and seven cutup. His third and seven cutup is immaculate. And again, that's schematic. There's a lot of things that go into that, but there's just something about it that it the one-to-one corollary from college to the NFL is really hard with all these guys except for him. And so I understand that's probably part of the reason why, but I just really enjoy it. And I that was the first time I'd said that publicly, was on that show, and this is the second time I'm saying it, but I can't help myself. I like him a lot as a football player, so
So you mentioned the third and seven. So the last few weeks, Because, like, you know, you can look at online, there's 1,000 stats for every for all these things, and each one will tell you, paint a story as to why this player is worthy of being picked high, or why they're not. So I've had the last few weeks, I had on Chris Sims, I had Dane Brugler on, some others. I'm
Smart
like,
guys,
tell
man.
me what's that?
So smart people there.
Well, you know, I couldn't get, you know, I got to do what I got to do sometimes. I got to raise the IQ because I'm not helping the cause by any, my SAT scores weren't helping anybody.
Stop.
All right. So but so I'm like, look, just tell me this one thing. There's 100 reasons why you do something. I take one of these. I get it. Give me the one reason why you would take somebody. Why you would? What's the thing for you that ultimately, at the end of the day, you value the most? And you know, one guy showed me some stats. He talked about the pressure to sack rate, and that was his concern with Daniels. Others talked about the ability to create when everything falls apart. Like it's more, it shows that there's like it isn't just like being somewhat robotic in the pocket. For me, this may be, you know, my Luddite thinking, but for me, it's 3rd and 7 in a real game, not week 5 at Arizona. I mean, like, this is the game. Can you make the play? That to me is my thing.
Sure.
And that's why I can't shake JJ McCarthy, because I'm not saying the other two can't. I just feel like that's for him, like the strength. And again, for me, this is like my quarterback scouting fetish. That's what I want to see. So
Yeah.
that's partly why I can't shake it. Let me read you a quote here really quick.
Sure.
Because part of what is so confusing about all this, like if you are a film guy, you're a football guy, I'm sure for you, you're doing this for the purity of trying to figure out these guys. The rest of us are animals, and we're all like, this guy is better than this guy. Okay. So I did a quarterback story a couple weeks ago where I spoke to 17 different people around the league to give me their top four quarterbacks, tell me what you like or don't, whatever. But I also talked to some people that who wouldn't give me their rankings for whatever the reason, but they were willing to talk, including an active general manager. And this quote got cut from the story. I'll just say, side note, no offense to my editor or anybody else, but like it wasn't my call. I'll just leave it at that. It was a length thing. Anyway, this is a quote that he gave me. The conversation was about the noise, the pre-draft noise, and how it can be crazy. And this was the example he pulled out of thin air. He's talking to a Washington reporter, but pulled out of thin air.
Sure.
Quote, "I find it almost malpractice that someone would record," meaning, you know, do this, "or write that it is absurd. Washington might choose McCarthy at 2 because he is supposedly," he air quotes, supposedly, or, you know, "the fourth quarterback in this draft," end quote. And the point was, who is saying he's the fourth guy? You're saying it.
Right.
Who's saying it? It
Right.
doesn't mean anything. We've been trained from the beginning that it's Daniels or May, and McCarthy is just sort of the little brother hanging out on the side. This has been my thing this whole time, but I feel like McCarthy should be closer to this conversation. And I guess the reason why I'm discussing this is we're almost to the end here, right?
Yeah.
And you can't shake him. You're a smart guy. I again, I'm not watching like you. I can't shake him. So like part of me is like, are we just overlooking this whole time? And also, like, I've heard people say that McCarthy, if Kyle Shanahan was sort of involved in this discussion,
Sure.
that he might be the guy that would fit best for what he wants to do. And where did Adam Peters just come from? Who was Dan Quinn's OC at Atlanta? So all these things keep swirling in my head. So I've talked long enough. What do you say to any of that?
Yeah, so I think you bring up great points. And if this was Kyle, I think it would be JJ. I think you just look at what he does. Like, there's something about, like, when you're running like a CO concept and you look at the corner, you're not
What
looking at the
what's the
route.
what concept?
Oh, so CO. So it's a corner and an out. So like a 5 yard out and like a 12 yard corner. And it's really good versus cover two. And so instead of me looking at the concept, I'm looking at the defender. And I use my eyes, I look at the flat. The corner moves up to the out, and then I just rip a absolute fastball to the corner, beating the safety of the spot. Like, that to me is NFL throws. And we're running drive. So we got like a shallow cross, a 5 yard crossing route. We got a 14 yard dig, and I'm gonna stare down the cross. The linebacker is gonna step up. I'm gonna rip a fastball to the dig right over that dude's left ear. Like, those are NFL throws. That's NFL manipulation of the defense. 100%. The problem that I have in this situation is, what version of this Cliff Kingsbury offense are we going to see? That's what I keep coming back to. Because if
Yes.
they're going to be in this kind of, they're going to be in the gun a lot, they're going to be in the pistol a lot, they're going to kind of be in this air raid And again, like to be fair to Cliff, like in 2021, his offense looked a lot more like Kyle Shanahan's than it did anything he did when he was in college. He had a lot of tight ends. He had a lot of kind of different formations. He had a lot of shifts, a lot of motions. That's 2021. And so I say to myself, well, I think JJ could be successful in that. But I also have enough respect for Cliff to say that he knows he's a smart enough guy to know what JJ does well, what Jaden does well, and what Drake does well. So he's going to kind of be able to build this offense to support those skill sets, right? And one thing I keep coming back to is if you're in the gun a lot and you don't have this dynamic kind of under center rushing attack like they do in San Francisco, one of the things that adds diversity to that attack is your ability to run the quarterback. And I'm not saying you need to run him all the time, but even if you're bringing five designed quarterback runs a game, like that changes how the defense has to play you. And I look at that and I say to myself, like, that's probably why I'd go Jaden here. But in terms of NFL offense, NFL throws, NFL timing, NFL footwork, like it's got to be JJ. He's got to be up there number one. And the other thing about JJ that I keep coming back to is he can do some of this zone read, some of the quarterback power stuff, and he does it really well. So, and that's not to diminish what Jaden does or diminish what Drake does, but I do think he needs to be in the conversation. I just don't. And the thing that makes this part so hard is what does Cliff value and what does Cliff want to see with these guys? Because that's ultimately the $1 million question. Like if I'm Adam, I'm talking to Cliff a lot about this process. Because A, do you think you can develop this guy? And B, how do you plan on using this skill set? And those are the things that I think are that make this diagnostic, which quarterback they're going to take so challenging.
I remember the first time that I thought, oh, I think Logan and I might have be on the same wavelength a lot. As I'm when last year, 2 years ago, I mentioned position flex drives me crazy, and your reaction was like immediate. I was like, oh my God, it kills me. I have the same reaction here. I keep saying, like, I can come up with every scenario possible that I can think of that says why one of these quarterbacks makes sense here. Drake May ran some version of the air raid. Jaden Daniels feels like he's a perfect quarterback for that Kingsbury thing. It is the McCarthy I get to. I'm like, I don't know what to make of it. But then it's like, well, wait, Cliff Kingsbury could be the OC here for the next decade, or he could be gone next year if they have a good year and he gets hired again. So are they really making decisions based on the one guy who could be here for 10 minutes? That doesn't make any sense. But then you also want to put the quarterback in the best position possible. And like you said, he's probably smart enough to adjust, but at the same point, why bring in Cliff Kingsbury to have him not be Cliff Kingsbury, I guess. And that's why this gets confusing.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think, like, again, like the offense that, and to Cliff's credit, like the offense has changed. It's evolved over from 2020 to 2021 when he was in Arizona. Like, it changed quite a bit and it fit what Kyler Murray did well. And I think that's one of the reasons why you saw a very productive version of Kyler Murray, is they did stuff that was. And the other thing about Cliff that I really like is he's able to find kind of 5 to 8 opportunities for the quarterback to have easy throws and easy looks a game for explosive plays. So, I'm very confident that this is going to look well. It just depends on what they value, and determining what Adam values separate from what Kyle valued at the quarterback position is going to be extremely challenging. And again, when you watch Jaden, now just to make this very clear, when you watch Jaden, his ability to make plays and kind of make plays in key moments and do those things, especially in 2023. He's the best player in college football, right? He's a fantastic football player. It's just the projection from the offense that he's running is really challenging because nobody runs that simplistic version of an offense. And so it just we can talk ourselves in circles here, but they all have their pluses, they all have their minuses. And I think the diagnostic ability here of saying this is the quarterback they're going to select is really, really challenging because I don't even know what this offense is going to look like, quite frankly, because it could look like 2021 or it could look like 2020 with in Arizona, which were drastically different versions with the same signal caller.
Yeah, no, for sure. And then I'm curious about this. We don't need to get into the whole what did you think of the Topgolf thing? But if to an extent, it's obviously a way they've already discussed. It's a way for them to talk to these guys in a more casual setting and they're not feeling stuffy like you're, a 21-year-old sitting in a dinner with a bunch of adults. But at the same time, it does potentially show a personality traits, who commands a room, all things like that. And obviously at quarterback, this is a huge deal. Like Taylor Heineke clearly everybody gravitated to that dude, right? Like, that was pretty obvious just being in the room, and when you watched him play and the whole Chase Young, you know, Heineke, you know, all like everybody liked this guy. Now, I'm not saying they didn't like Sam Howell, but Sam was very quiet. We'd be in the locker room and he's just kind of doing his own thing. I'm not knocking that, but at that position, I do wonder what matters here. And I bring this up to say, when I remember going back to the Senior Bowl, talking to some of Jaden Daniels' teammates, and the comments were, love Jaden, great guy. He kind of leads by example. He's not much of a vocal leader. I don't know if we can go so far as to say he's an introvert, but relatively speaking, I think he kind of might be. Whereas every time I see, and I think you mentioned this in your video on the team site, whenever I see McCarthy talk, I'm like, boy, I like this guy.
Yeah,
he's got a certain energy about him. He was talking the other day about how when he's like sort of like off field, he like listens to like Bob Marley a lot, which I like. And Drake May, clearly, like if you were remaking Jerry Maguire today, and you had to put a quarterback in that Jerry O'Connell role of the quarterback, like Drake May, the name, the look, yeah, the everything, just put that guy in the movie. So as a former player, and now you do what you do here as an analyst, how much does any of that actually matter when it comes to when you're selecting the quarterback?
I think it's important, but I also think that, you know, Adam Peters and Dan Quinn deserve a lot of credit for this roster construction, because one of the benefits of bringing in an Austin Ekeler, a Bobby Wagner, a Zach Ertz is you have guys that are really good leaders. And so you take some of that onus off the quarterback to be this dynamic personality in year one. And you can kind of let him grow into that position as he gets more confident in the organization. So instead of having to worry, and this applies to all three guys, but instead of having to worry about being this, you know, charismatic leader, face of the franchise, it's like you've unloaded some of that responsibility to these veterans, at least for the first year, and let him kind of grow and mature on his own. And hopefully by year two, he kind of is more willing to step into that role and people understand like what he's about, you know, like, cause you know, you lead by example, like, Deshaun Watson, say what you want about him, but when I was with him in Houston, he's not like this crazy rah-rah guy, but he's personable. He'd come up to you. Like, I remember I came in and he was just, you know, I'm a guy. I'm just some random dude that they brought in the day before the first game. Introduced himself, invited me out to dinner, like the whole offense. It was great, right? But it wasn't like, oh my gosh, you're leading crazy. No, it's like in the big moments, he was calm. He worked his tail off. And he was very productive on the field. And so I think when you look at Jaden, just as an example in this instance, like his work ethic, at least for stuff I've heard about him, seems to just be on a totally different level. So guys respect that. Guys respect that.
That you or me?
I don't know. That was weird though.
I have a lot of the computer. I don't know if I'm gonna edit this out, but the computer. So often it's me, but you just refresh your screen, so maybe it was you. I don't know.
It did it automatically for me, so I don't know. My internet's been weird. We got new internet. It's supposed to be really good, but it does this every once in a while, so I'm not sure.
Same here. It's a weird business, weird world. I got to operate this, you know, highly consumed podcast. It's, you know, very high-ranking podcast, and yet I'm using, like, a couple of mice to, like, keep the internet going. It's bizarre. But anyway, so you were just finishing off about the idea that, you know, whether, you know, how much it matters that these guys are vocal leaders right off the bat, which leads me to a couple other questions. I want to veer off the quarterback really quickly. I continue to hear both national reporters and some fans talk about Washington's draft as if 2024 is what matters the most. And I have been operating before free agency that it is not. That what matters the most is what are they building? That like all the moves that they largely made, other than Frankie Louvu and Biotish, and I guess you could say Dorrance Armstrong, everybody else was about, we have to play a game at some point. We have to put a roster out there, and we need to start reshaping the mentality, the culture, all that stuff here as well, which is where you bring in these guys on one-year deals to both fill in the gaps and help the culture. So for you, as you go into this draft, they got 9 picks. It's not just about 2. Is this more, do you think more about 2024, or is this more about 2025?
It's definitely more about 2025, I think. But I also think you can't ignore 2024 to get to 2025. Like, this is a stepping stone for 2025. So you want to make sure you hit on about 50% of these picks. You want to get guys that have roles on the team. You don't want to, like, draft all these guys and have them all get cut because you're worried about developmental stuff for 2025. You need to get good football players.
Right.
So I think, like, that's the way I look at it. It's like, hey, you know, can we get this roster more talented? And that's where I think, like, if they just rely on best player available philosophy in this draft, I think they're going to come out okay. Because, like you said, a lot of these guys are on 1 year deals. They're not the answer moving forward. So you can kind of, like, for example, like we were doing something the other day and I was like, oh, they could take a linebacker at 36. They're like, oh no, they've got all these line. But for me, like, you have Bobby Wagner on a 1 year deal. Jamin Davis is on his 5th year option, or they might not renew, they might not pick up
Right.
his 5th year option. And so you really have Frankie Luvu. So for 2025, like, I can take a linebacker and feel really good about it. I can take an edge because there's not somebody long term here opposite of Dorrance Armstrong. So I think all those things need to be in play. Like, you just need to get more talented. And I think there's something liberating about that. But I also just think that's good draft philosophy, quite frankly. You know what I'm saying? I think, like, you signed Cornelius Lucas. Like, Cornelius Lucas could start for you if you need to for 2024. But let's say I draft, like, hypothetically, Amarius Mims, and he has to sit for 8 weeks. Like, that's okay because he's our long-term answer moving forward after that. So I just think it's like, get the most talented pieces, the guys you feel like are going to hit really at a high level, and just use this as a stepping stone to just increase the total talent on the team. So.
Perfect segue to where I wanted to go next. I had to do my final Commanders only mock draft the other day, and I had been typically saying, hey, you know what? I do think it makes logical sense for them to trade up, but meaning in the to get a second first round pick, to trade back into the first round to get one of these tackles, right? There's a bunch of good ones, but they're all probably going to go, but not going to be there at 36. And then I got to the line of scrimmage the other day and completely audibled and went the other way. In part because, so in other words, I traded down from 36. My thinking, one, I'm 1,000,000% with you on the 2025 aspect. Next year is the year that I think Adam Peters gets his freak on when it comes to really being aggressive
Sure.
in the offseason. So having more ammunition, i.e., an extra second round pick in this case, makes sense. But here's my question. So everybody says trade up for the tackle. You just alluded to this. There's a line between how talented somebody is versus, well, what's the expectation? Amarius Mims has started 8 games in college. Tyler Guyton started 15 games in college. They're, like, typically viewed as the last two tackles. I mean, Jordan Morgan, depending on how you view him, but,
Yeah.
like, he started 3 years. Like, for him, it's not an experience thing. If the expectation is you got to go get one of these guys because they're going to protect the quarterback, really? Are we really saying that these guys who are that inexperienced are going to come in day one and do this? And if they're not, does it make sense for a team that's trying to get as much talent as possible to give up picks
Yeah.
for this guy when it's not there won't be talented tackles in next year's draft when you're going to be ready? So, like, I that's where I was like, you know what? I don't know if that makes the most sense unless you tell me Amarius Mims is the next Trent Williams or something. You know, I'm not, I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, unless you can't pass on the talent if you can get them.
Yeah. So for me, the trade up thing is interesting because I think, like you said, I think it's you're trying to make sure that your talent, the roster overall is increasing in talent. And when you trade away picks, that's not happening. However, I will say this in terms of my evaluation of Amarius Mims, he, I think, again, you never know for sure, but he could be kind of that special guy, that next big kind of offensive lineman that's, generational type player from a physical tools, talent, athleticism perspective, right? Is he wired mentally the right way to get to that level? I don't know. But if there's one guy that I would consider trading up for in this draft, it's him. Because I do think you've got a good roster construction. You've got Wiley, you've got Lucas. He doesn't have to play right away, but in terms of ceiling, like, he could come out of this being the best player in the draft. Like, that's not hyperbole, that's not exaggeration. Like, that is his ceiling.
You mean among the
So,
tackles?
I mean, amongst any player. Like, I
Oh.
mean, I think you're talking about him potentially, hypothetically, 5 years from now being like, oh, this guy's going to the Hall of Fame. Like, that's kind of the talent you're talking about there. Now, does he get there? And that's where all of that kind of individual meeting time and talking with his coaches, that's where all that comes in. But so if there's one guy that I would target and say I would trade up for him, it's probably that guy. But like you said, like, is it worth it? And kind of to follow up on that, tackles are very hard to find. They're just such a unique build of human being. You're looking for this huge man that moves like a smaller person, and it's just very hard to find good ones. And so that's why you see there's probably 8 starting caliber tackles in this class, and none of them are going to be in the second round. They're all going to push to the first round because they're such a valuable commodity. So what I would say is, like, if you're looking forward to next year, let's say there's 5 guys. They're all those guys are still going to go in the first round. So if you've identified, just as hypothetically, like Amarius Mims as being that guy, or Tyler Guyton, maybe also is a guy who's very talented. I personally value Amarius Mims more, but that's my opinion. If that's the guy, then I might be willing to take a shot if the price was right. You know, I did a mock draft a couple days ago with Craig, and one of the things is like, oh, we exchange the second round pick for the first pick and a third or something like that. That's not too much of an asking price for me if that evaluation on that player is so high. Right now, for that kind of exchange, you're probably talking in like the 25 to 35 range in terms of trading up. I don't think he's going to be there.
That's the rub with him. Like, you know, yeah, you probably have to trade ahead of the Bengals at 18 just to be, and that's such a far, you probably have to give a first round pick to move from 36 to 17, hypothetically. Yeah. That's a lot.
It is a lot. And that's where you say that it's probably not worth it, even though that upside's really worth it. But, you know, like in some of the mocks you see, like, you know, I read a lot of mock drafts, he slides to 24. I'd consider it then. Like, if he's taking a little bit of a slide, I'm making phone calls and say, hey, can we get up there and make this pick happen? So that's kind of my thought on that. And again, like, I totally agree with you. You want more bites at the apple. You want to get the total roster more talented. So giving away picks is kind of the opposite of that. But, you know, like, I would consider it for that kind of talent.
Right. And, you know, and Guyton is the one that's probably, I think, a better chance to be there. And again, he might be great too, but I looked at like all the various public evaluators. They all say some version of he's not ready. And all I'm saying is if the goal everybody says is to trade up, well, I'm for a guy to help protect whoever the quarterback is. That might not be the way to go. That's why I decided to go the other way with 2025. All right, sure. I only got you for a couple more minutes before you have to get back to your fancy lifestyle. Tell me, explain this. They lose Curtis Samuel in free agency. I know they signed the guy who was with the Eagles last year, whose name I just cannot get to.
Oz.
Okay, great.
Oz. Zacchaeus.
I you know, and he had a couple productive years prior to last year.
Yeah.
But I, you know, he's another. Like, I keep thinking they're going to get a bigger receiver or whatever. Did the receiver position get cut? Like, they had brought in, like, nobody for these 30 visits. They didn't, like I said, they weren't really in the mix for anybody. What's going on here? Is somebody on the roster that they like more, or are they just being that stealth? What's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I think the receivers on the roster are talented. I think Zacchaeus, I played with him when I was in Atlanta. He's a very good football player, kind of wired the right way. He was a young player then, but I love him as a guy. You know what I'm saying?
6 degrees of Logan Paulson. Okay,
that's exactly right. So I do think there's a lot of talented people, but the other thing about this receiver draft is like, you could throw a rock and hit one. Like, so they're going to come out of this draft with a receiver. It just depends on who they like and who they decide on. You know what I'm saying? Like, there was a ton of, like, you look at, everyone says, oh, well, they didn't meet with, they haven't met with Tyler Guyton outside the combine. They met with him at the Senior Bowl. I don't know that for sure, but like, I would put a lot of money on that.
Yeah.
They probably met with a lot of receivers at the combine. And when you look at the Senior Bowl, when you look at the receivers at the Senior Bowl, there's probably, I'm just kind of trying to review off the top of my head, probably 10 guys that are going to be starting caliber players at the Senior Bowl. You know what I mean? So they've had interactions with these guys. They haven't brought them in for 30 visits, or at least it hasn't been reported. But I do think there's a lot of talented people that they could have easily talked to at the Senior Bowl to kind of, so I'm not worried about it. There's just so many, like, in terms of talent in the draft, like, they're going to come out with one of them, maybe in the fifth round, but that guy's going to be a contributor in some capacity.
Sure. It just is, and I got, the 30 visits could mean a lot. I think there's something to that for sure, and it could mean nothing.
Definitely.
But the fact that they brought in like nobody was as weird. Last one, I saved the best to last for you. I've been begging them to get, no offense to anybody on the roster, I've been begging them to upgrade their tight end situation over the last few years. And, you know, they drafted Cole Turner. To this point, it hasn't completely worked. They brought in Sanders, the kid from Texas, who's viewed as like the number two guy, to Brock Bowers. They brought in Jared Wiley, who I believe you know a little bit.
Yep.
Those guys or anybody else, if you're gonna stand on the table and say, this guy, as a former tight end, as a tight end expert, this is who I like the best.
Well, I think it comes down to stylistically what you're looking for. And are you looking for a Y with pass game upside? Then you say a guy like Jared Wiley or a guy like Theo Johnson or a guy like Tip Reiman from Illinois would be perfect for that kind of role. Obviously, they have pluses and minuses, all of them. But I do think that the reason I kind of ever so slightly err towards Jared Wiley is I do think he moves a little bit more naturally and catches the football more naturally than those other guys. If you're looking for like an F, a guy that's dynamic, kind of your Zach Ertz replacement, then Sanders is your guy, right? And then I think as you move down the list, you know, maybe Ben Sinnott, someone like that, Jaheim Bell, I'm a little on the fence about, but those are the types of guys you're talking about. So for me, it's like, stylistically, what are you looking for? And based on the guys they brought in one of each. And I think they're just looking to get more talented at the position. So I think this offense is going to throw the football a lot. They're also going to have to run block a little bit. So that's where I would err on a guy like Jared Widley, as opposed to a guy like Theo Johnson. I think Theo Johnson has tremendous athletic upside. He had the highest RAS score of a tight end over the last like 10 years or something crazy like that. He just doesn't bend and move as well as I thought he would move, right? So that's where, again, Jared Wiley's the guy that I would kind of err towards there.
All right. Oh, and Jared Wiley's the one I've been going with. We've talked about him here on the podcast. All right, last question, and then you got to go. I don't need I don't need a sentence. I don't need a paragraph. I don't need a sonnet. I need a name. Number two, who is it?
Jaden Daniels is the guy I'm going to go with at two, as of right now. And, you know, like I said, I have to say this because this is true. I would be excited if any three of them were selected, but I would think I'd have to put my money on Jaden Daniels at the moment.
All right. You bet it here. Bet your house on Jaden Daniels. No, just kidding. Just kidding. You rock as always. Always appreciate the time. Good luck with all you're going to have going on this week, because I know you're going to be a very busy man.
Yes.
And we'll see what happens. Thanks, man.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, and by the way, what else do we need to plug for you?
Oh, okay, yeah. So
I'll do all this. I did all this in the beginning, but
yeah, make sure you guys check out the live stream, the Commanders live stream Thursday and Friday of the draft. We will have interviews with Dan Quinn, with Adam Peters, with the draft pick. We're the first outlet to get those interviews, so make sure you check it out. We're going to give analysis pre and post pick. It's going to be so fun Thursday and Friday. Make sure you guys check it out.
Boy, you guys have that inside access, literally.
Inside access.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
All right. Logan Rules. I almost thought I was saying Logan Roy. No, Logan Rules. Anybody who's ever heard me talk about how's it going with my mock drafts, I'm always like, oh, this is terrible. I'm going to do awful. And I feel that way again this year, too. I think part of the problem for this year specifically is it's impossible for me to do a mock draft without doing trades. And trades are such a wonky element. Who knows? It could be 100 different things, you know. But if I don't do a trade, then J.J. McCarthy is just going to fall to the Vikings at 11. I mean, I guess he could go to the Giants at 6, but for me, that just doesn't kind of make sense. You know, the Giants were a playoff team last year, not this year, but the year before, and won a game. To take a quarterback suggests that, like, they're kind of starting over, but Daniel Jones is still here. Like, I don't know. Like, it doesn't make sense. But my point is, though, that, like, if he gets past him, then McCarthy just goes to the Vikings at 11, and that's not going to happen. Simultaneously, if the Vikings trade up, is it with the Cardinals, the Patriots, or the Chargers? I can make a case for any of the three. If McCarthy slipped a little bit further, the Falcons at 8 would make a ton of sense. I think the Bears at 9, I think logically should want to trade down. They only have 4 picks, and one of them will be on Caleb Williams, but then they have the 9th pick, and then they only have 2 more the rest of the entire draft. I doubt that that's how they want to go about things. And, you know, I get that, like, they could take one of these big receivers, but if Roma Dunze is there, who's a really good player, I like that guy a lot. They already have Keenan Allen and DJ Moore. I mean, I know that's, you know, Keenan Allen's deal is only 1 year, but still, that's a lot to invest at receiver when they still have so many other needs. They need more pass rushing. They need an offensive tackle. So, like, so logically, I think they should trade down. But if they do, well, then who's trading up? Who wants that? I think that I've heard there are teams that were trying to get into the top 10 for Brock Bowers. His floor might be 10 to the Jets, but not necessarily because it's the Jets. Like, the Jets may take him if he's there, but he may be gone before that. Is that Jacksonville at 17 trying to move up? Is that the Colts at 15 trying to move up? I don't know. What are the Jets going to do? We kind of feel like it's obviously Brock Bowers or an offensive lineman, depending on how much more aggressive they want to be for 2024. That's a team that is playing for 2024, as Logan and I just discussed, whereas the Commanders are not. How does that work, right? If it's, you know, where are the offensive tackles going? The more this conversation happens, like we just discussed with Logan, the idea of Amarius Mims, whereas I had Mims being more closer to the end of the first round in previous mocks, now less so. I think now, I don't know, he gets into past the Steelers at 20. What does that mean? If there's a feeling that the tackles are going to start to go, then maybe more teams start taking tackles. Now, all of a sudden,
the cornerbacks, Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold, who at various points I had going in the top 15, maybe two that suffer and fall and drop back. You can't put everybody up here high, right? So these are just some of the things that I definitely am wondering about. For sure, there's been this Byron Murphy discussion in recent days. I did Evan Silva's podcast over at Established for the Run with him, Adam Leventon, and a couple other guys. We did the similar mock draft exercise here. We did it over there, and somebody took Byron Murphy 8. I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I'm just saying, like, this discussion can change depending on what's out there, what you think. And it makes it very hard to do a mock draft because, again, I just don't see how you can do one of these without doing trades. And predicting a trade, it's even harder than predicting who the player, or maybe, I don't know, percentage-wise it's harder, but, like, it's very hard. How do I don't know. Again, are the Vikings trading from 11 to 3, 4, or 5? Depending on what they do will change a lot. I think ultimately the Patriots take a quarterback, but I'm just saying it changes the draft projection so much if you do that, you know. And it, you know, if they trade with the Cardinals at 4, the Cardinals could easily trade back into the top 6 to land one of those receivers. If the Chargers do it, then I think the Chargers stay back and take a tackle at 11. It's all interesting. It's all confusing. I enjoy the heck out of it all, but it leads to really interesting discussions. Even at number 2, again, the psychology of why Washington could or couldn't take any of these quarterbacks to me is really interesting. And Logan and I got into that. And I enjoyed that part of that conversation as well. All right, let me end it here. I really appreciate everyone checking out the podcast and checking out my work on The Athletic, checking me out on X at Ben Standig, still Twitter. Let me not call it X flat out. But that is it for the moment. For now, Ben Standig signing off. Bonafide Coffee and Lenny. Until next time.